Sometime around 4, 5, maybe 6 o'clock tomorrow night, I'm going to experience it. I've experienced it before, and I know I'm going to experience it again. Because you see, tomorrow morning, Bridget and I are going to pack the car. We're going to take Casey and Sam and put them in the back seat and strap them in their seats. And then we're going to take the 4-hour ride over to the west side of the state because we need to experience it. Because we've experienced it before, and I don't know about you, but I need to experience it again. Because you see, we're going to get there, we're going to get settled in, and then we're going to take the walk. We're going to take the walk down that dirt road with the trees that overhang, and eventually we're going to get to a set of stairs. We're going to climb that set of stairs, and we're going to turn the corner, and there it'll be. Lake Michigan, in all of her glory, immediately, I'm going to experience it. Bridget calls it our "it's not about you" moment. Every time we journey to Lake Michigan and we turn that corner and we stand on the great, beautiful expanse of that creation of God's, all of a sudden, everything else in this world falls immediately into place. On the edge of that big body of water, I suddenly understand that it's not all about me. But this world is big, and something much bigger than me is holding it all together, and every burden and every care, every worry that I bring with me to that lake suddenly falls into proper perspective. And in that moment, I know everything. Everything is going to be okay. If you got a place like that, a place where you go, where it all just kind of comes together, where you experience that kind of peace, where is that place for you? Who's got a place like that? Anybody, where do you go, Ed?
Garden.
Your garden, right outside the back door, in the garden. It all falls together. Denny, where do you go?
Up north.
Up north. I didn't realize if I moved to Michigan, like up north is like a, that's like a place, man. That's like, explains everything. Where do you go, Tony? Pardon?
Hilton Head Island.
Hilton Head Island, South Carolina. Lynn? Where? The waterfall at Florida State. At Florida State, the waterfall. Camping at Judson Collins every year. Even in the midst of the tornado that came this year, right? You still felt that peace. It all comes together. If Robin, I thought Robin DeMutt would be here today. I think it's about the fourth or fifth hole at the golf course where she experiences that peace. And by the time we get ready to leave Lake Michigan, my prayer is every year that somehow Lake Michigan is going to come home with me. Because what would it be to know and experience that kind of reality each and every day, each and every moment of our lives, that kind of peace where everything simply comes together. Today, our scripture that I'm going to share with us points us towards something about that. And it comes from the 14th chapter of John's gospel. And the scene that Jesus is talking to here is an amazing scene. Remember what's happening in the 14th chapter of John. Jesus is preparing his disciples that he's about to leave. He's preparing them for the fact that he is going to die. And he's not just going to die a normal death. He's going to die a horrific death. And he seems to know that. And so he's trying to get his disciples ready for that. Because Jesus knows that in just a moment, for that group of his followers and friends, their entire world is about to fall apart. Everything they have come to believe is going to be called into question. Their very notions of God are going to be shattered. Everything that they had placed their security in will be shaken to the core. And so in that moment, just before all of the things that they thought they understood about life were going to simply be gone in a moment's notice, Jesus says this to them. And I believe he says this to us. He says, don't let your hearts be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. For in my Father's house there are many dwelling places. There are many rooms. If it were not so, would I have told you that I go there to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come and I will take you to myself so that where I am, you may be also. And you know the way to the place where I am going. Because I am the way. And I am the truth. And I am the life. You want to get to the Father? You come through me. And if you know me, you also know the Father. From now on, you do know him. And you've seen him. And then he says this. He says, peace. I leave you with peace. And I don't give as the world gives. So don't let your hearts be troubled. And don't let them be afraid. John 14:27. Need another verse to remember? Remember this one. You know that guy at the game that always holds the John 3:16 sign? I'm showing up with this one from now on. Right? I'm showing up. When I first saw that sign, I thought John 3:16 was John Madden's weight, you know. But then I came to the Lord and I understood. But peace. Peace I leave you. My peace I give you. And I don't give as the world gives. So don't let your hearts be troubled. And don't be afraid. We have been given God's peace. Think about that moment in that upper room, what Jesus has just given to those disciples. He gives them his peace. Right when everything was about to fall apart, he offers them his peace because he knows they're going to need it. And isn't that why we're here? Because we know that we're going to need it. That we're going to need God's peace. And that's why we're here. And that's the good news of this entire sermon series, is that through the fruits of the Spirit, that gift has already been given to us. It's already in you, and it's already in me. And sometimes it's just simply coming to realize that. Jesus says, I'm going to give you God's peace. I'm going to give you my peace, and I don't give as the world gives, so don't let your heart be troubled. When we think of peace in the terms of our world, I put this out on my Facebook. This is how I do sermon research now. We didn't have Facebook when I first started in the ministry. Now I just put out a question, and I wait to see how people answer it. I asked on Monday this week, I said, it's Peace Week at the church. What is your definition of peace? And one person after another said, peace is the absence of conflict. That's the world's peace. And think of the things we go in this world to do in order to get conflict away from us. Sometimes you got to roll a tank down the middle of a street in order to get peace in a community. Sometimes we got to build prisons and jails in order to get peace in our community. Sometimes we feel like we got to build walls along borders in order to get peace in our community. We get restraining orders and whatever it takes in order to keep the conflict out there, keep the conflict away from us. That's the kind of peace the world talks about. But Jesus says, I'm going to give you another kind of peace. You see, the peace Jesus talks about isn't the absence of conflict. The peace Jesus is talking about is the presence of God, even in the midst of conflicts. It's the presence of God no matter what war is raging around us or what war is raging within us. Peace, God's peace. When Jesus was talking about God's peace, he was speaking to them in their language, and their language was Aramaic, very close to the Hebrew. So when Jesus said, "I leave you my peace," he used a word that would have captured their heart and their imagination, a word in the Hebrew and in the Aramaic that our word peace doesn't even come close to fully capturing. When Jesus said, "I give you my peace," he said, "I give you my shalom." Shalom. Isn't that a cool word? Shalom. And shalom is so much more than the absence of conflict. Shalom is one of the most important words embedded in the whole biblical tradition. Shalom is God's peace. It means wholeness and connection and health and well-being. It's the total presence of God. Jesus says, "I give you the total presence of God right now in your life. You get my shalom. And it lives in you and it lives in me." And so when somebody says shalom to you, they aren't just saying, "I hope you don't have conflict in your life today." They're saying, "I hope you just experience God no matter what goes on in your day." God's shalom comes to us. And when we begin to get in touch with this total experience of God, we begin to experience that peace in at least three different important ways. First of all, we get to discover that peace, first and foremost, is we get shalom with God. Shalom with God. Peace with God. For far too long, we humans have strived to make peace with God. We've strived to make peace with God because sometimes we have this image that God is the cosmic cop, right? That God is the cosmic sheriff. That God is walking around the cosmos looking to catch you and to catch me breaking one of the rules, right? That God walks around with the cowboy hat trying to look for us and point us out. And when he catches us, he's like those sheriffs in those movies. "Hey, who let you in here anyhow? Don't you know you just broke page 696, paragraph double D, line number 7 of the cosmic code? Boy, you're coming with me." Right? And we think God is that cosmic sheriff that has a list and checks it twice, that God knows who's been naughty and who's been nice. We've lived most of our life knowing that we're probably on the wrong list. And so we spend most of our life trying to make peace with God, trying to do elaborate things in order to get on the good list, to get our name off of the list. If that's our image of God, then we believe God is angry, and that God is angry with us. And God takes great pleasure in catching us and then punishing us and requiring us to do a whole bunch of good deeds in order to appease this angry God. Think of all the elaborate systems of sacrifice religious people have set up through the world in order to appease an angry God. And along comes Jesus and declares peace. Peace. There's peace between God and us. Peace. It's God that waves the white flag. God said, "There's peace." God says, "I'm not an angry God. I'm not angry with you, and I'm not angry with me. There is peace." If you hear nothing else that I say today, hear that God is at peace with us. And we don't have to try so hard in order to win his affection. He's given us his peace. It's yours and it's mine. God is not an angry God that needs for us to make peace with. God has made peace already with us. When we experience that peace with God, we may have a chance to have that shalom with others. This is the hard one, isn't it? Because let's face it, wherever two or more gather, there's a chance for conflict, right? There's a chance for conflict. Maybe nothing upsets us more than our inner peace than conflict with other people. Think of all the people that you can be in conflict with. You can be in conflict with people in your family. You can be in conflict with people that you're married to. You can be in conflict with the person who lives next door. You can be in conflict with the people you work with. You can be in conflict with the people you go to church with. You can be in conflict with the people you share the road with. Am I meddling now? Anybody get in conflict with the guy on the road this week? Right? You can be in conflict with the guy who cheers for the wrong team. Right, Dave? Right? You and Don, you sit on opposite ends of the church. Right? It was funny, I was asking the woman at the dry cleaning. I picked up my dry cleaning yesterday, and I was talking to her about the sermon that we're going to be preaching and talking about peace. And I said, how do you get peace? She says, I get peace when I go in my room and shut the door and don't let anybody mess with me. I said, yeah, if it wasn't for other people, we could have a whole lot of peace, right? You ever feel like that? That this life would be a whole lot easier if there wasn't a whole lot of other people that you had to share it with? Right? The thing that messes up our inner peace more than anything is other people. And here comes Jesus and say, you can have shalom with other people. You can have peace with other people. Because in order to get peace, as the world says it, if the world says it's just an absence of conflict, well, then you got to shut yourself off from other people. You got to lock the door and you got to not answer the phone. You got to do everything you can in order to keep people at a distance. And here comes Jesus and says, I have a different peace than that. You can be at peace with one another. So how do you experience that kind of peace? It comes from realizing that the only control we have in any of our relationships is how we react to it. It's the only thing we can control. You know when you lose your sense of peace in a relationship? When you try to control others. When you try to control how they dress, how they speak, how they spend, how they drive, how they vote, how they believe, how they worship. Can you think of all the people in your life that you'd had conflict with because they weren't doing one of those things in a way that you wanted them to do it? Think of all that. I'm a new parent. I'm just getting the hang of this, man. Casey is already, you know what Casey's mantra is right now? I never get to do anything that I want. He's 5, man, and he's already saying, stop controlling me. I don't care that my shirt and shorts don't match, Dad. This is what I want to wear today. You are messing my life up. Right? Peace with others comes when we let go of our need to control others. And this is especially true in any relationship that you're having struggle with. There's a relationship where you feel particularly hurt, particularly disregarded, particularly misunderstood or shamed or disrespected. If there's a relationship where you feel like somebody owes you something, owes you an apology, owes you an amends, owes you money, owes you a thank you, owes you something, if you're walking around with all of this need to try to get something from somebody else, you walk around saying, have you ever done this? I know I've done this. I'm not going to be nice to that person until they do this or do that or say they're sorry. I mean, I'm okay with it, but I'm just going to wait till they say they're sorry. As soon as they say they're sorry, this whole relationship will be fine. You ever found yourself checking those things out? I'm here today to tell you nothing will rob you more of the peace God wants to give you than walking around with a laundry list of things you think other people owe you. God says, gotta let go of the things you think other people owe you. This is a great definition for the peace that Christ has given us. The peace of Christ is the release for all hope of a better past. Marinate on that. Christian peace is the release of all hope for a better past. Because you know the truth and I know the truth. There's nothing we can do about what's already happened. We can't change it. You want a better past? Start writing that past today. You want to know when I experienced it? 5 years ago. It's a really confessional moment. 5 years ago, my relationship with my dad completely crashed. Completely fell apart. I'm talking completely fell apart. I don't even remember exactly what happened. We went home for Christmas. A misunderstanding led to some words. Some words led to an argument. An argument led to some yelling. Some yelling left to some shouting. Some shouting left to me on Christmas Day packing my car and going home with my family. And for the next 5 months, we didn't talk. We didn't talk at all. And I carried around all of that hurt, all of that anger, all of that frustration. Kept saying in my head, all he's got to do is say he's sorry and it'll all be better. I kept saying, I'll talk to him as soon as he's ready to say he's sorry. And I walked around with this list of things that I needed my dad to do in order to make peace. I had a really good spiritual mentor in my life. He said, Jeff, for the next 90 days, I need you to start every morning on your knees. And I need you to pray for forgiveness for your dad. And I need you to pray to release him from all of the things you think he owes you. And simply pray that each day your dad would get the peace of God in his life. And so I did it. For 90 days, I started my day on my knees. And I prayed. And I prayed. I prayed through gritted teeth in the beginning. Forgive him. Forgive that man. After 90 days, my jaw started to release. And after 90 days, I was able to pick up the phone, and I was able to call him. We were just able to talk, and I didn't sit there and wait for him to do anything for me. It wasn't a Hallmark moment by any means, but there was peace. We began to write a new past that day on that phone. That's the peace God is talking about with one another. When you realize God has declared peace with us, is no longer requiring us an apology in order to be in right relationship, maybe we can come to that place with one another where we can be at peace by releasing those people who've messed up our past and beginning a new past with them today. And finally, the spot where we can experience that shalom, and this isn't where we most want it, isn't it? Peace with ourselves. Maybe that's the hardest one of all. Because sometimes we walk around with a bag full of hang-ups, hurts, and habits. We got a list of all the things we said and we shouldn't have, and all the things we should have said and didn't. All the things we wish we could take back or do over, and we carry those around, and it robs us of our peace. Have you ever gone to that quiet place? And only to have the head kind of going off inside of you, like, you messed that up, you messed that up. And you're like, this is the last time I'm going to prayer. Right? Because you can't shut off that voice inside of you. It's interesting. The Apostle Paul wrote a letter to the church at Rome about this peace that God's given to us. And here's what he said. He said, if God is for us, who can be against us? He said, well, and what will separate us from the great love of God made known in Christ? He said, well, hardship or famine or nakedness or sword or peril? He said, no, in all things we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. In all things we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. And if God is for us, then who can be against us? Maybe it's time to realize we got to stop being against ourselves. And accept that peace that God truly has forgiven us. The peace of God has been given to us. God has declared it with us so that we may declare it with each other. And maybe, just maybe, we can begin to experience it in ourselves. I want to introduce you to this guy. His name is Horatio Spafford. Horatio was a prominent Chicago lawyer in the 1860s. He was rich, he was influential, he was powerful. All of that started to change in the year 1870. His only son was killed by scarlet fever. In 1871, the Chicago fire destroyed everything in the city. All of his real estate investments were gone. and he had to start all over again. In 1873, trying to piece his life back together, he decided his family should take a holiday somewhere in England. He was delayed because of business, so he sent his family ahead. His wife Anna and their four daughters, Annie, Margaret Lee, Elizabeth, and Tanetta, went ahead. On November 22, 1873, while crossing the Atlantic Ocean, his ship was struck by an iron sailing vessel, and 226 people lost their lives, including all four of his daughters. His wife Anna survived the tragedy, and upon arriving in England, sent a telegram that simply said, "Saved alone." Spafford got aboard a boat to England in order to meet his grieving wife. And as he crossed that Atlantic sea, he got to that place where the wreck had happened. And he took the pencil out of his pocket and the journal that he had, and he wrote these words. You know what? Why don't we sing those words? Will you stand and sing with me?